Hey, what is up, True Crime Murderinos? Welcome to our first episode of Murder Pod, a true crime set. You know, within this 35 to 55 minutes, depending on how much info I can get for you guys, we're going to explore some of the most wicked criminals and some of the most devious crimes ever committed. We're going to try and take a good look into the lives of the victims and the victims' families. We're going to try and understand the mind of the detectives as they uncover clues and hopefully, most of the time, discover the perpetrator. Finally, we're going to take some time at the end to discuss the psychology of the criminal in order to better understand, you know, some of the risk factors or biomarkers that may have led these individuals to make these horrible decisions in the first place. You know, hopefully, if we can understand the dangerous minds of these individuals now, we can avoid similar fates in the future. These episodes are going to be ever-evolving, just like the real cases are. So, you know, chime in, share, and we're going to update these stories together. The more awareness we can spread and the more thought-provoking conversation we can engage in, the safer we'll all be.
Okay, so today's episode is going to focus on Mia Marcano. Mia was a beautiful 19-year-old sophomore at Valencia Community College. This is community college in Orlando, Florida. Mia was originally from South Florida, Pembroke Pines, to be specific. This is kind of like that, you know, Fort Lauderdale, Pembroke Pines, Miramar, little hub in South Florida, probably about 35 minutes away from Miami, Florida, and about 3.5 hours away from Orlando by car. And Orlando is where everything is going to take place. All right. So Orlando is where Mia was living at the time, and then where this crime was finally committed. The window of time this all takes place in would be September to October. So this is, you know, late summer, early fall in Florida, kind of getting into hurricane season as well. It's, you know, hot, muggy, sticky, very rainy all the time. And, you know, this is actually going to play a role in this case a bit, you know, kind of when we're thinking about how quick the detectives need to find evidence. And, you know, when we're looking at rates of decomp and what that's going to tell us about what happened. So yeah, weather's going to play a part in this as well. Fun fact, this case was actually happening at the exact same time as the Gabby Petito disappearance. A lot of us are familiar with Gabby's case, which garnered a lot of media attention. And, you know, always glad when that happens. But, you know, oftentimes our Black and Brown victims are on the short end of, I would say, this disparity stick when we're looking at, you know, who tends to get more attention. So yeah, let's give some space for Mia's story. September 24th, 2021. So this is day one for our story. Basically, this is the day that witnesses claim to last have seen Mia. You know, last contact, last video footage, and, you know, very likely day one of the incident, you know, day the crime took place. So Mia was actually scheduled to go home to Pembroke Pines to see family that night. And Dad mentions that he actually got a chance to speak with Mia while she was at work. And, you know, it was a nice regular check-in, confirmed that she'd be going to the airport later and would be landing at Fort Lauderdale Airport. And so some accounts I'm seeing that she was supposed to board around 10:30, 11. Other places say she was landing at 10:30, 11. Either way, the flight's an hour between Orlando and Fort Lauderdale. So, you know, late night, she was supposed to be in the air or getting there, all right? But so Mia's dad talks to her while she's at work. And then around 5 p.m. is when Mia leaves work. And so there's video footage of her leaving the leasing department. Mia, I think I mentioned earlier, worked for the leasing department at the Arden Villas apartment building, which is where she also lived. All right. So come 10:30, 11, 12, come, you know, when she's supposed to be landing in Fort Lauderdale, no one is there. The parents notice that, you know, Mia actually didn't even board the flight. So, of course, the family starts to get a bit concerned, especially since, you know, dad had just spoke with Mia earlier in the day. Didn't seem like anything was wrong. You know, I'm thinking maybe not, you know, the family's not freaking out too much. But, you know, at the same time, this is 2021. We all have cell phones. And it's really easy to, like, send a text or a quick phone call to say, like, hey, missed the flight, or, you know, I'm going to catch a flight tomorrow. You know, so a little concerning, right? So family gets in touch with Mia's friends in Orlando fairly quickly. And apparently Mia has a roommate. So by about 3 a.m. the morning of September 25th, friends head over to the Arden Villas apartment and knock on the door, and the roommate answers. And roommate mentions, you know, hey, no one's here. Mia is definitely not here. No one's come over while I've been home, and it doesn't seem like anyone was in the house before I got here either. So you know, now it's 3 a.m. and that is looking a little sketch. So the family called the police. Luckily, in this case, police take the call pretty seriously. A lot of times, you know, as soon as you're 18 and up, sometimes police can say, hey, they're an adult. They technically can be missing if they want to be. And then when that happens, you know, sometimes it just wastes so many hours of, like, actual investigating that can be done. But, you know, it looks like here things started fairly quickly. So that's pretty good. So yeah, 9:24, day one, Mia misses her flight. What's going on? Looks like she's not even in her room. September 25th, 2021, Mia is missing throughout the whole night now, so probably like 10 to 12 hours at this point since, or longer, honestly, if we're thinking that no one's really seen her since 5. We're getting past 12 hours that she's been missing. And always scary when someone's missing through the night, too. You know, like, what are you doing? Where could you be at, you know, 3, 4, 5 a.m.? So Orange County PD, which is Orlando PD, they managed to get into her bedroom at this point. I'm assuming that means they get a warrant to go in, or, you know, she's missing. So they have, you know, like a wellness check. They have a reason to go in. What they find now in Mia's bedroom is concerning and probably the last thing they wanted to see. So first, what they find is that Mia's bedroom door is blocked by her dresser. Then it also seems like there are blood stains on the pillow, which is on the bed. You know, can't confirm for sure, you know, until we test it, but pretty sure that's what it looks like at this point. Also seems like the bedroom window is tampered with and not necessarily broken or shattered, but seems like, you know, could be propped in a certain way. And the latch, you know, open. So everything just looking a little bit suspicious here. So confirming that, yeah, we want to go and move forward with a missing persons report here. I found one of the early posters here, so I'll just read it for you guys. It says, Mia Marcano, missing, 4'9", 130 pounds, brown hair, green eyes, last seen at Arden Villa's apartment, leaving leasing office on 9:24 at 5 p.m. been a while now. And, you know, that's last scene is kind of confirmed by everyone at work. And then there is some CCTV footage, you know, building cameras that can kind of confirm that, yeah, she walked out, walked towards her apartment. So everyone's pretty concerned at this point. We are getting the ball rolling on this missing persons report. Family's looking for her. Orange County PD is looking for her. Pretty quickly, there are some rumors going around, mostly coming from friends, about another individual who also works at the apartments. This person apparently obsessed with Mia, has this crush, was always texting Mia, saying things like, I would give you my life savings to be with you. You know, just these little rumors about this guy who's like obsessed with her, crushing on her. So quickly, family picks up on this. But before they even need to go and like find who this person is, of course, they show up on their own wanting to help out, you know, wanting to give their statement and help find their friend. I don't know why people always do this. I'm not saying this person did it, right? But I'm just saying, I mean, let's say this person is guilty. I mean, we're going to get into the answers pretty quick here. Why do people always feel like they're going to come to the cops and like, you know, probably shift the investigation to their liking and they're like, got all these skills or something? I don't know why this always happens, but possibly this is what's happening here. And so, yeah, we will explore a little further into the phenomenon of criminals turning themselves in while thinking they are actually, I don't even know what they're thinking, but yes, we see this often. All right, so we are at the evening of September 25th, okay? Family's hearing gossip about this guy who works in the maintenance department of the same building that Mia lives in, Arden Villas. You know, they're hearing that this guy is like into her, crushing on her, been trying for a while, but is not really getting a response. Mia is like, nah, I am not interested. So, evening of the 25th, Armando Caballero, 27-year-old, who works at the, you know, maintenance department, like I said, shows up to the apartments and, you know, he voluntarily comes and says that he wants to help out, right? And so he wants to give a statement to the cops about, you know, hey, what's going on here? What's up with Mia? So
what, you know, the family already has this background knowledge on him. So they like rush over to kind of watch the conversation. It's a really informal conversation. There's actually videotape of this because the family was already so suspicious of this guy that they got their cameras out and they were videotaping the whole interaction. And, you know, the family does this a couple of times. They kind of like have like their own parallel investigation with the cops, you know, like they, I mean, we'll get into it later, but, you know, they kind of do their thing and they show up with the cameras and they are asking questions and they're videotaping and they're getting evidence. Like they're going to get some pretty good evidence and damning evidence later on. So this is really awesome when you see this and, you know, when it doesn't get in the way with the police investigation. So, yeah, so there's this informal conversation outside the apartments. You can see Armando is standing there by the cop car and just answering some questions. Family's videotaping them. And then pretty quickly, the family starts yelling out questions to Armando. They're like, hey, you know, what's going on? Where is she? Why do you keep bringing up this other person that was the last person to see her? I think it's some person named Tara. He keeps bringing up, and they're like, nobody else knows anyone named Tara. Why do you keep bringing up Tara? And you can see him just shrugging his shoulders. And he's like, well, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I know who Tara is. We work together. To be fair, you know, watching the video, I did watch it. I don't think he really looks like he's lying. He seemed pretty calm. And I would say if he seems a little uncomfortable, I think it's normal to seem uncomfortable. You know, this is a missing girl, the family surrounding you with cameras, and they're throwing questions out at you, right? So they also start throwing out questions about this crush, and they're like, we're hearing that you're obsessed with her and you keep reaching out. He kind of has a moment here where he gets, I don't know if it's his ego that gets in the way, but he's just like, It wasn't one-sided. You know, don't try and make it look like that. This wasn't one-sided. He does start to pace a bit and look a little nervous. But again, I don't think anything outside of the normal reaction. I mean, I would be pretty freaked out if I was in this situation. However, what we're going to find out is this guy is a lot more involved in the situation than, you know, he is, you know, would care to share. And that just makes me think, you know, wow, compartmentalization is real, you know? I'll just say, you know, this guy's pretty involved and ends up finding that he is pretty much the guy who is responsible for what ends up happening to Mia. And I gotta say, he handled himself pretty well in that interview with the family yelling questions out there. And that just really creeps me out. You know, whenever, I mean, I've seen so many videos of people that we know are people that are guilty of a crime. And then you're seeing them when they're lying about it. And they just seem so casual and so collected. And I think some of that happened here. And if you want to find the video, I can share it. It's pretty interesting. And it's interesting to watch behavior. I'm in psychiatry, so I love watching. You know, are there some clues that he left? Are there some little tells, you know? I didn't see any. But I think it's because I'm giving a little bit of credit to the, it's an anxious situation anyway. So any anxiety that could have been because of what he did, you could attribute it to the situation also, just being surrounded by a bunch of people who are yelling at you, right? Now, the family does follow him after this interaction. Like I said, they're kind of doing their own investigation, right? Side by side with the cops. And they follow him to his building after this, to his apartment. And they also, they're recording him. They have their cameras out. And they witness him removing gloves, a backpack, and a pink blanket from his car. And they videotape him, you know, removing this, throwing it into the trash. So they're clearly really suspicious of this guy and wanting to make sure that they catch all his movements, which is pretty freaking smart. You know, I love that they do this. I'm very happy they didn't get caught because, you know, of course, I'm sure like it could be considered harassment too, especially if he is innocent. But, you know, hey, this is their girl missing, so they're going to do what they need to do. So they got this on camera and, you know, a little suspicious. What is this? You know, why are you throwing this out? Kind of, you know, the timing of it is also a little suspicious.
Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit here. Who is Armando Caballero, right? Let's look into this guy a little bit. So Armando is he's a maintenance worker at Arden Villas, actually. So they work together. I haven't been able to find too much on him, especially in his, social media presence wasn't, you know, too active. I did see his Instagram bio, which said God, family, success, student athlete at Warner University. Looks like he was a quarterback at Warner University, and he graduated high school in 2013 from Colonial High School. Like I said, Facebook and IG, both not really active. And, you know, I get a lot of my info from there, so couldn't find too much. Does seem to be originally from Orlando, and he does have a history, a violent history, a stalking history. So it's always so frustrating when this happens, right? Because if something was done before, you know, so something was taken a little more serious, then maybe we could have prevented what happens later, you know, what happens down the road. So, okay, let me get back into it. 6 months before Mia disappeared, a 23-year-old woman reported Armando to PD after her bedroom window was smashed at midnight with a 5-pound gym weight. She didn't necessarily have evidence that it was him, but she felt pretty confident. She suspected the maintenance man, who is Armando. All right, so apparently she had originally agreed to go on a date with him. And when he had called to, like, cancel and, you know, change the time, she decided to just take that as an opportunity to just cancel altogether because she wasn't really that interested. He got pissed off and, you know, there wasn't that much evidence, so the case was closed, but this woman felt pretty confident that this was him throwing the 5-pound weight into her bedroom window at midnight. All right, so there is a history there. Sadly, nothing was really done about it. So like Mia's friends had said, like I mentioned earlier, Mia's friends had mentioned that he was really into her. He was sending Mia text messages saying that I'll give up my life savings to be with you. He had cash-apped her a few times, unwarranted. You know, she wasn't really asking for it, but I think he was just trying to show that he wants to be her partner and will support her. I don't know what that's about. And whatever, whether she accepted the money or not is pointless. You know, doesn't really matter because I can accept some cash and not be murdered, right? So yeah, this is a little bit, this is mostly what I found about this guy. Did have a history, and unfortunately, case was closed. So, you know, possibly he went on to commit similar crimes against Mia. Sunday, September 26, 2021. Here's where things get interesting. And here is when, you know, this is when police are able to finally get the records and video footage from the apartment. This also includes key fob. So this place, you know, you enter your apartment with a key fob. And this is really interesting because it's really made me realize like how much you are constantly leaving a trace of every movement you make, even when you feel like you're alone. It's like your phone or your key fob or, you know, your Apple Watch or a camera that's watching you. So, you know, in this case, we were able to create like a pretty detailed timeline of Marcana's last few hours, which kind of lined up with Caballero's last few hours as well. So here's where we start realizing, yo, I think something's going on here. So basically, what we can see now is starting on the day of her disappearance, of Mia's disappearance, September 24th, we're looking at the key fob information. At 4:30, it looks like Mia's apartment was accessed by not her key fob, but by the maintenance man's key fob, Caballero's. All right. This was about 30 minutes before Mia even left work. Meaning, you know, we can assume that it's very likely that he was in the room before she arrived, possibly waiting to ambush her. He knew she was at work, so knew that she'd be there soon. So 5 p.m., we see Mia on camera leaving the office. 5:52, we see Caballero's vehicle leaving the apartment complex. So something happens in that room. Probably took Mia maybe like 5 minutes to get to her apartment. So from like 5:05 to 5:52, you know, we know he's in the room because we haven't seen him come out, right? So we know he's in there and something is happening between like 5:05 and 5:52. We're not sure if Mia was still alive when she left the apartment, since when the apartment was checked, she wasn't there. We don't know if she was alive. But we don't see Caballero's car return to the apartment for a little while after this, okay? 7:01 p.m., this is still 9:24, Caballero makes a fake maintenance call. I haven't seen too much info on the specifics of what this is, what happened, but from what I can assume, you know, what it looks like, what he's trying to do, I can assume that it was a fake call to give the impression that Mia was in her apartment and calling for someone in maintenance to stop by and help out with an issue. And I guess this is some forward thinking on his part, because this is going to, of course, give Caballero a reason to be in that apartment and to possibly have left fingerprints or any other type of DNA in the apartment, right? So, okay, an attempt there. You know, there's an attempt, right? Some type of forward thinking. It's also going to paint the picture that Mia is alive and well at 7:01 p.m., right? And this is going to disrupt whatever timeline that the cops are trying to put together for Mia's last moments, right? Okay, so 7:01, fake maintenance call. 7:11, Caballero contacts the apartment office and asks to be let in the building. Again, this is to enter the apartment for that maintenance request. 7:16, someone, and we can assume it's Caballero, uses Mia's key fob to swipe the exterior lock to the door. However, no one enters. So I guess with these doors, you know, you can see when the fob is, you know, passed, and you can also see when the door is opened, right? So I don't know why, just totally didn't follow through, right? So the key fob was swiped, but no one enters, okay? Then 7:38 p.m., we see on video Caballero leaving the Arden Apartments. So after going over this key fob info and some of this video evidence, the police are pretty sure that Caballero has to be involved here. And they decide to issue an arrest warrant for unlawful entrance and burglary. That's what they can at least start with. They can't say anything else happened. They don't know, but they can at least maybe get a warrant for unlawful entrance and burglary, and then that's a way to get him in the station and start questioning him a little bit more. September 27th, 2021. Orange County PD is called to the Timberscan Apartments. Apparently, a man has been found hanging in the apartment building's garage. So Orange County PD shows up and they are able to identify that the individual is Armando Caballero. You know, we can't determine exactly why this happened and what it's related to at this moment, but obviously, you know, a lot of assumptions flying around and, you know, it seems like it's most likely related to what's going on here with Mia. There is Orange County Sheriff John Mina, who makes an announcement to the public, and he mentions a man who investigators determined was a person of interest in a 19-year-old woman's disappearance was found dead Monday at an apartment complex in Seminole County. Caballero was found and is being delivered to the sheriff's office for processing. So the death investigation of Caballero is being conducted by the Seminole County Sheriff's Office. We have been actively searching for Caballero this weekend, and I want to reiterate, Mia is still missing. Her disappearance is suspicious, and our detectives and the family members obviously suspect foul play. So this is a statement made by Orange County Sheriff John Mina. Apparently, Armando was found in the apartment's garage by another tenant, and he was found hanging nearby his car. All right. So detectives say that he had likely been dead for quite some time. And if we think back to our timeline, Mia's family caught him on camera the evening of September 25th, you know, throwing that blanket and the gloves, a few other things out of his car. But that's the last time that anyone saw him. And then PD is saying that he likely has been dead for, you know, quite some time. So, you know, could have been evening or early morning, you know, evening of the 25th or early morning of the 26th when this happened. So, you know, there goes prime suspect number one for questions and for, you know, full confession and all those details that we love to know. You know, where was your mind? Where was your head when this happened? What were you thinking? Did you do it? Did you not? Was anyone else involved? There goes all those answers at the door, which is always so frustrating. Oh, can I dislike someone even more? Oh my God. But so anyways, you know, this happens, but immediately detectives want to get back on the case and need to focus now on just searching for Mia through other means. You know, they're not going to be able to question him. They did try and get this unlawful entrance and burglary warrant, and that was a way to get Armando into the station for questioning. But since they can't go that route, back to, you know, tracking people through records and cell phones and key fobs and, you know, finding the actual person. You know, hopefully she's still alive, but obviously at this point, it's not looking too good. Now that they can't question their prime suspect, detectives go back to searching for Mia. You know, like I said, going through some records and questioning people. They eventually get a chance to look into Caballero's phone records. And so they're able to trace his phone near the Timberscan apartments. Well, this is where he lives, so that makes sense. But they're able to trace that on the day of her disappearance, September 24th, between 8:20 and 8:40 p.m., so there's like this 20-minute window where his phone was located near this densely, it says forest, but I mean, I'm from South Florida. There's not really much forest in Florida, but okay. Just this like densely wooded, natural, maybe, jungly area in the back of the apartments. And they decide to, you know, go back there and search. All right. It's not an area that his phone was traced going into before. Thank you. October 2nd, 2021, they find Mia Marcano's body in the densely wooded area behind the Timbersian apartments, 18 miles west from Marcano's home where she originally went missing. There was a purse found nearby. The shirt that she was wearing that day was found in the purse, and she was bound with duct tape on her hands and feet, and there was also duct tape around her neck. So, Orange County PD Sheriff Mina makes another announcement. This is not the update I wanted to give everyone. Our hearts are broken. Everyone wanted this outcome to be different. So, when Mia's found, her remains are completely skeletonized, and it's only been 7 days. So this is considered rapid decomp, which could be related to the hot and humid weather in Florida. But that week in particular, you know, this is, like I said, that late summer, early fall hurricane weather, and it's hot and muggy and humidity, and it's raining a lot. The week that Mia was out there, it was high 80s in the day, high 70s at night, but humidity like 80 to 90% the whole time. The day Mia went missing and presumably was murdered, the weather was a high of 86, 75 low, humidity 92%. So what does decomp look like in that weather? So according to one team that I found, so this is Bio Team Arizona, and they are a biohazard and crime scene cleanup organization. Pretty cool. That seems like a really dope job, honestly. So they mentioned that bodies decompose fastest in hot and moist environments with high temperatures. Bacteria in a body produces gas at a faster rate, and so this creates more openings in the skin for flies to lay eggs. Heat is also going to play a role. Heat helps break down cell structures, and, you know, the liquefaction of bodily fluids occur in a shorter timeline when you're in a hot, moist, humid environment. Okay, and the National Institute of Health, the NIH, they mention, quote, in summer, a human body in an exposed location can be reduced to bones in just 9 days, end quote. So this kind of correlates with what happened to Marcano, you know, time frame, and already just, you know, within those 7 days, pretty much having her completely skeletonized. It kind of fits with what we're seeing here for rapid decomp. NIH also says exposure to elevated temperatures, increased humidity, and or water can cause accelerated decomposition. So this all explains why, you know, this is the crime scene we're finding, why we're finding skeletonized remains, and it's only been, you know, about a week. So when the medical examiner decides to take a look at, you know, what happened, there is no indication of sexual assault. However, this may have been sexually motivated. You know, we can get into theories a little bit later, but just from the history of the offender and their relationship, we can assume that there was some romance or sexual motivation here. Okay. Orange County Chief Medical Examiner Joshua D. Stephanie ruled the death homicide by undetermined means. They were unable to determine, and this is because of the advanced state of decomposition.
There were no soft tissue injuries that they could actually examine. So, you know, we're not really able to know if, you know, strangled, stabbed, shot.
We're not able to really understand because of the accelerated rate of decomp and how that affects the work that the medical examiner needs to do in really telling us exactly what happened in Mia's final moments.
Okay, so it's always a tricky situation. It's always really frustrating, honestly, when our prime suspect, our perpetrator, is no longer with us. So we can't get exact details, motivation, you know, how things went down. We don't know all those details. But a lot of times with evidence, you know, physical evidence and circumstantial evidence, we can pretty much come to a almost definite conclusion as to what happened. So there are a few theories here and, you know, based on some of the key fob data, the cell phone data, we're able to come up with a pretty decent theory here on how this went down. So 4:30 p.m. September 24th, Caballero enters Marcano's apartment using his key fob, his maintenance key fob that can enter all the apartments. He enters in there while she's still at work, knowing that she's still at work. Not entirely sure if this was, you know, planned ahead of time, but we can assume that when he entered the room, there were already some malintentions there. He had already been rejected a couple times. He's obviously sneaking into her bedroom when she's not there. So, you know, maybe he was just about to, you know, scare her, confront her, yell at her. Or, you know, maybe he came in there with the intentions of, hey, I'm going to kill this person. So based on other cases that I've read and heard about, I feel like this was, you know, maybe somewhat planned. He came in there to scare her and to maybe force himself on her. And then things got out of control and, you know, ended up killing her. All right. The next thing that we see is the bedroom window that was propped. They're actually thinking that this is how Caballero was able to get Marcano's body out of that room. So we never see Caballero leave the apartment through the front door ever again. And so the dresser that was placed in front of the bedroom door was propped there to make sure that no one comes in and out bedroom. And the window actually had a lock that Marcano's dad had placed for her for safety. So this lock was propped. And he opened up the window and, you know, probably this is the way that he got Marcano's body out of the room, placed her inside the trunk of his car, and then drove away. And then we do see on building cameras that about 5:50 p.m., he's driving out of the building, most likely with Marcano's body already in the trunk at this time. Once Caballero got home, he stayed home less than 30 minutes. Because then, you know, this is when we see that he heads back to the apartments, the Arden Villas apartments, and he makes that fake maintenance call. Via GPS data, we do see that he is back at his apartment building, the Timberscan apartments, by about 8:30 p.m. This is where we see his cell phone data goes to that wooded area behind his building. So again, like between 8:20 and 8:40. So he's back at his apartment during this window, and he's in the wooded area behind his apartment at this time. And so he spends about 20-25 minutes there. During this window of time, this is when we're assuming he dumps Marcano's body in the woods with the purse, and he goes back to his car. The next day, the 25th, this is when he is caught on camera by the family dumping some stuff out of his car, like the blanket and gloves. And presumably that night is when he commits suicide, just based on, you know, witness testimony of when he was last seen, last heard from. And when the medical examiner looks at his body, they can see that he had passed away probably about 24 to 48 hours before he was found. So very likely the evening of the 25th or the morning of the 26th is when he committed suicide. Since Mia's death, many questions have been raised about safety and security, even behind locked doors. You know, you're supposed to feel safest when you're at home, in your apartment, where you not just live, but you also work there. You know, when you're going on trips now in Airbnbs and hotels, it's a little scary. I mean, I've always been someone, just because I'm a true crime murderino, I have been someone who's very concerned about things like that. And I prop my door with, you know, a chair or a desk. Always looking for, you know, to be somewhere that has a deadbolt. But, you know, with a lot of these newer locks these days that just use these key fobs or use these codes, if you misplace the key fob or if someone has their own, you know, maintenance key fob or the code and there's no deadbolt there, how safe are you really, right? We're entrusting all our safety to people that, you know, we don't really actually know. We just kind of assume that they're trustworthy. So due to Mia's incident, the Florida Senate unanimously approved a bill that aims to improve tenant safety in apartment buildings. So this occurred in March 2022, filed by Senator Linda Stewart, and it's also known as Mia's Law. So Mia's Law, what it does, it strengthens the requirements regarding access to individuals' units. It increases required notice to 24 hours and requires apartments to establish policies for issuing and returning keys and requires a key log to be maintained with access only given to authorized individuals. The bill is now set to go to the House for approval. So while I see this is great, you know, this is great that this is happening. I don't know how preventative this is. This is more, I guess, you know, we'll be able to track who had access in case something did happen and, you know, hopefully deter people from wanting to do anything because we know, you know, they would know that they are, you know, we were keeping track. We know who they are. But, you know, what about preventative? I say let's all get deadbolts back on our doors, you know, not one, not two, like three deadbolts. You know, I don't want to be in like a culture of fear, but how about a culture of safety? And then this bill can create, you know, foster that safe, that culture of accountability. So Mia Marcano, a beautiful 19-year-old girl from South Florida, she left an impact on all her friends and family and all of us that have heard her story countless times. And, you know, even though she was here for such a short time, she made such a large impact, you know, in her life and in her death. So, true crime murderinos, let's raise our glasses and cheers to Mia Marcano.